Well, if you've ever put your hands at the base of your back, leaned into them, and winced a little, you know how uncomfortable lower back pain can make you. But the answer isn't to keep up or give up being active. It's finding the right kind of exercise to strengthen those muscles and bring some relief. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As always, we are lucky to have a couple of top-notch physical therapists with us to answer your questions and to share great information with us. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have you here, Lori. Thank you so much.
Good to be here.
And Bill Boisenall, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, great to see you as well.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be back.
Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Questions for them, I hope you'll reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. A lot of people suffer from a back pain, first of all, but what are some of the most common reasons for back pain?
Well, common reasons for back pain.
Being, you know, alive?
Yes, yes, exactly. Being a human or being a dachshund, one of those two.
Right.
We'll get you. But, you know, our spines were not designed for our upright posture and for some of the things that we do. So over time, wear and tear, almost everybody, I don't know what the statistics are, but I would say that almost everybody experiences back pain at some point in their life. The things we ask it to do, to, you know, to lift things out of the trunk of a car, lifting, twisting, people who do repetitive overhead work where they're extending their spine, we just ask a lot of that structure. We ask it to be mobile. So you think of dancers and gymnasts. We ask it to be strong, to carry our body weight and do repetitive work. We ask a lot of our spine. So, you know, we get some wear and tear of it. And then if you add an injury on top of that, you're at a high risk for having some back pain, either acute or chronic or both.
And I guess it can lead to a situation where you don't want to exercise. But, Bill, maybe that's the wrong approach.
Well, it's coming back to what Lori started with, up to 80-85% of us will have a back pain episode at some point in our life. So it does impact a majority of people. Thankfully, in a majority of cases, it resolves within 4 to 6 weeks. You know, the analogy I give to some of the patients I work with is pretty much we all sprain our ankle at some point in our lives, and it usually takes anywhere from 4 to 5 days to maybe 2 to 3 weeks for that ankle to heal, where we're back to activities again. There's a very small subset of people with low back pain where it can progress to something more serious, and it is a fairly small group. Pressure on a nerve can cause significant pain down into the leg, or numbness, or weakness, or bowel and bladder changes. But for a majority of people, staying active is really important. When I first finished PT school not a lifetime ago, people were hospitalized for a back pain episode in traction for 7 to 10 days. That was routine.
Wow.
And what the research has shown, well, certainly since then, is that bed rest beyond 24 to 48 hours for most people starts causing more problems than helping problems. And so staying active, you know, kind of a parameter that I give people is the kind of pain I don't want them working through is pain that is shooting, especially into the leg, pain that is pinching, sharp in nature. Your body's telling you this isn't good for me at the moment. But stiffness, a little bit of achiness is something that is really, really common and not serious in, you know, a vast, vast majority of people.
There's some new research out there about Pilates and people with lower back pain. Do you know?
Well, it was a recent meta-analysis or a systematic review where they looked at a number of papers. There were previous systematic reviews that were done, but a bunch of new randomized clinical trials came out looking at Pilates. And, you know, kind of like most other exercise regimens, there are mixed results, mostly because oftentimes the studies are what we call underpowered. They don't have a big enough sample size to really be able to say anything. But in general, you know, people who do Pilates exercise are show improvements over people who are not exercising or who get what they call routine care. And routine care is defined differently in every study. Sometimes it's just advice. Sometimes it's consultation. Sometimes they're told to go walk. Sometimes they're, you know, told to ride a bicycle or whatever. So I think the bottom line on exercise is to find something that you enjoy. You know, some people, you know, love doing Pilates. They love going to the Pilates studio. Some people love yoga. They love going to the yoga studio. Some people like exercising at home with a video. I think the bottom line is to find what you enjoy doing because you'll stick with it. Sticking with it is really what's going to get you better in the long run. So you need to find something you enjoy. You know, if your doctor says, you know, oh, you have to go do this, well, maybe there's a way to find something else that you enjoy. And then a physical therapist can help you modify that to keep it within the boundaries of what your back can take at any point in time.
You know, I had a little sharper back pain here not long ago, and you guys told me to go and see a physical therapist. And
imagine that.
We just tell you just to suck it up and deal with it, or
you know, I went, and this has been since last month when you were here, and she said, "Well, you need to do some stretching exercise." She got me on a bunch of stretching exercises. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, the back pain went away. Yeah. So,
wahoo!
Yeah. Well, the flexibility, I think, and this is, we've had this conversation over all the years that we've been on, is finding the right balance. And flexibility is important. Strength and endurance is important. Posture, you know, education is important. It's usually, for people who have symptoms like you had, then you need a combination of those.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that has been shown over the years is that people who are generally better conditioned have fewer back pain episodes or severe back pain episodes. And again, like Lori said, finding something you really enjoy doing is the key. But when you're having pain like you had, things that you enjoy doing were going to make you worse until something changed. And that's where flexibility, manual therapy, mobilization, manipulation comes into play early on to get people moving better. And then you can work more on strength and core things around that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, so it's not just strength and it's not just cardiovascular exercise. It's a combination. And in your case, Larry, the physical therapist evaluated you, did an assessment of your activities, which I believe generally include walking, running, and golfing, and biking. So a lot of cardiovascular and then some skill, but not much in the flexibility. So that was the piece that was missing for you, and that made a difference.
Becky did a good job. And she also told me my golf game would improve if I had more flexibility.
Oh, there's motivation for
there you.
There you
go, whatever it takes.
Well, we have, speaking of Becky's, here's Becky from Madison right now. Hi, Becky. Thank you for calling.
Hi. It's good to be on.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm actually a massage therapist, and I get a lot of people with back pain. And they're always amazed when I tell them the front of the body and the back of the body are connected. So often I find people with really tight hip flexors because they're sitting in their car, they're sitting at the computer, they're slouching on the TV. And when I strengthen and stretch and open those hip flexors, their low back feels so much better.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's an area that that can be tight because of the amount of sitting that we tend to do in our day. And because we tend to be flexed, sometimes when we stretch the back of our legs and we stretch our back, but we don't stretch the front. And sometimes that can lead to just some subtle abnormalities in our posture, both sitting and standing, that place more strain on our back. So, yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Thanks, Becky. Appreciate the call. And Barbara in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, I'm calling in regards to my 84-year-old mom who is very active, but in the beginning of June, she was a little too active at a senior exercise class where they didn't caution the folks to use controlled movements with a stretching band lying on her back with her legs up in the air, and she developed a pain that when we went to the doctor a couple weeks later, it was as a bursitis in the iliotibial band. And the doctor gave her a cortisone shot, gave her some stretches to do, and asked her to take a leave two tablets twice a day. We went back in July because things didn't seem to be getting any better. And he asked her to continue that same course. And she cannot back off of the Aleve or the pain returns. And she's still active. She is still walking several times a day. But she's got a significant limp. And I don't want this to cause some problem somewhere else down the line. So I'd like to know what your recommendations would be.
Barbara, has she seen a physical therapist along the way?
She has not, and that is what I would be thinking, that, you know, to get it evaluated. I don't even know if the original diagnosis is correct.
Right. Yeah. At this stage, if time was going to do it and the things that she tried were going to be enough, she should be better. And the fact she's not either means that there's some underlying reason locally in the IT band area, or part of this could be coming from her back. And that's one of the things that the physical therapist would help sort out. And at this stage, not only what's causing the pain, but what are contributing factors that are not allowing this to heal. And if it's impacting your walking ability, you're exactly right. It's throwing off how she stands and how she moves. That can lead to secondary and tertiary issues. So I'm assuming that your mother is on Medicare with her age. And if that's the case, then she'll need a referral from a physician to go to physical therapy. But I would agree with you. At this stage, it's time to have a second look and maybe a little different approach.
Good luck. Thanks, Barbara, for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, the iliotibial band is one of those notorious things that once you get it stirred up, it's difficult to sometimes get it calmed down. Sometimes your daily activities, walking, especially if you're walking on an incline or a decline, can simply perpetuate the symptoms, and it's really difficult to get rid of. So getting in to see a physical therapist to have some more interventions early on can prevent this from becoming a chronic issue.
Thanks, Barbara, for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Lisa next. Lisa, thank you very much for calling from St. Germain.
Hi. I'm a very fit 56-year-old, and I've never had back problems. Last Monday, I participated in a charity golf outing, and about a day or two after that, my lower back started aching pretty badly. Saturday was probably the peak, and I'm on my feet all day. I own a restaurant I cooked, and all that, and it was a extremely shooting pain, and I work out every morning. I decided Sunday morning not to work out, so it felt a little better yesterday, but it still aches pretty good. Any comments?
Yeah, Lisa, is the ache localized to your back, or does it move down into your legs?
A little into my legs when I have to bend down.
Okay, all right. Any numbness or tingling into
no.
the legs, pelvic area into the legs?
No, and I thought it was muscular because, I don't know, it goes into my behind a little bit, but
okay.
I don't know, it's pretty dumb.
Well, again, I think what you described is a fairly common story that Lori and I hear in the clinic, and backing off on your routine the following day was a really good idea, and I think maybe for another day or two. It sounds like you're active enough anyways with what you're doing at work. But then I would go back to your routine, and I would do exercise, again, that don't cause anything that sharp, shooting, pinching, or stabbing. And I would do things a little slower and maybe not as intense over the next week or two. You know, like I mentioned earlier, typically within 4 weeks, these kinds of episodes resolve. And it is a long time, but you should start noticing, again, improvement after each few days. You should be a little better than you were 3-4 days before. The bending I would be careful with. You know, use your knees, your legs as much as you can at work in terms of reaching for whether it's food items or pots and pans. And, sitting, be careful with sitting. When you do need to sit, maybe put a pillow behind your back so you don't slump. Avoid that slump sit posture. And
it bothers me when I sit.
I'm sorry?
It does bother me when I sit.
Yeah. So if you can avoid sitting, avoid it. When you have to, try to stay a more upright posture. And that will help you tolerate sitting a little bit better. When you want to get more concerned, if the pain starts moving down below your knees, you start having any numbness or tingling or bile and bladder changes, that's when you call your physician. But, okay. You know, again, this should resolve within, you know, 4 weeks for you, just avoiding the things that I mentioned as much as you can.
In my normal routine, I do a lot of aerobic activity or running on a treadmill. I'll back off of that a little bit, but what about stretching?
Stretching, well, I would do some gentle stretching. I would do it while you're lying down, as opposed to do any kind of stretching standing. What can aggravate things is people stand with their knees extended, then they do toe touches or windmills. That puts a lot of stress on structures in that low back area. But if you can do your stretching lying on your back or on your side, there's much less pressure on the back. And again, a nice mild stretch. It shouldn't be so intense you can't breathe and relax into it. And that should be okay for you.
There you go.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about your aches and pains, zeroing in a little bit today on backs and lower backs. But give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking with physical therapist Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And speaking of Facebook, I think Sue sent us a note. Could you guys talk about piriformis syndrome? Do I have that correct?
Mm-hmm.
A piriformis syndrome is, the piriformis muscle is a small muscle, kind of right in the middle of your buttocks, kind of right where you sit. And in most people, your sciatic nerve passes underneath that, although in some individuals, there are anomalies where it passes through it or things like that. And so if you sit on it all day long, that can cause sciatic symptoms. It can cause buttock pain or pain down the leg because of that constant pressure on your sciatic nerve. It can also come because of tightness in that muscle, because of how you sit or stand or move. So when people come in with buttock pain, one of the first things we do is try to decide what the origin of the pain is. Maybe it's coming from your back, from a pinched nerve in your back or a disc herniation in your back, or maybe it's coming locally from your buttocks. And if we do determine that it's coming from your piriformis, then we would usually put you on some exercises to stretch the piriformis. We'd look at your posture and see if how you're standing or sitting or moving is putting pressure on that muscle and on your sciatic nerve, and put you on a regimen of exercises and activities to take the load off of that. Sometimes it means checking how you sit, for example. The classic is people who sit with a wallet in their back pocket puts additional stress right on that piriformis. Or maybe the way your seat is designed at work, it puts more stress on it. So so that's piriformis syndrome in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Nick in Green Bay has a question. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It wasn't last night, but Saturday night, I cleaned buses for a big major bus company here in Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
And I was cleaning one of the tires, and all of a sudden I felt something snap my shoulder. It was just a pop, but now it really hurts. Like, it's my right arm, and if I take it and put it behind my back, it hurts really bad, like probably about even to my neck. And if I push it, it hurts a little bit. I was wondering, any suggestions on that? Or?
So this is your right shoulder?
Correct.
Yeah, and if you're right-handed, I presume.
Correct.
And have you ever hurt this shoulder before?
Never.
Okay. No. And when you say you put your arm behind your back, are you talking about like reaching down, like you're going to reach in your pocket or up and scratch your back, or behind your head back?
Like reach around my pocket. And actually, like when it snapped, I kind of lost some of the strength in that shoulder a little bit.
Okay. And does it feel, are you able to use it now? Does it feel unstable?
I can use it. I just don't have a lot of strength in that shoulder anymore.
Okay. Do you have numbness or tingling anywhere?
Nope. It just hurts.
It just hurts. Okay.
Yeah.
And may I ask how old you are?
I'm An old 42.
Oh, okay.
I feel 60.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are some things that are sort of age dependent. So, for example, if you have an unstable shoulder, chances are that would have shown up younger. So the first thing is, you know, did you sublux or partially dislocate your shoulder? You know, it's unlikely. What position was your arm in when this happened?
I was taking a brush and scrubbing on a big, huge tire. And actually, right where my arm meets and my shoulder, I've got, it's really weird. I got, three or four little, bruises. Someone took, a pencil and stabbed me in the arm a couple times. And there's, okay. like I said, five little bruises.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you ruptured or tore something. You know, if you have full use of your arm without substitution, you know, it's unlikely you ruptured your biceps or anything like that.
Good.
Can you, when you make a pop thigh arm, do your biceps look symmetrical on both sides?
Yep.
Do they look the same? Okay,
yep.
Good. Because if you rupture your biceps, it's kind of obvious. You know, I'd say you need to go in and have this looked at. There are enough things that can go wrong, and it's your dominant arm, and you have enough unusual symptoms, such as your bruising, that would warrant a more detailed examination to figure out exactly what's going on.
All right.
So if it was a simple muscle strain, you'd be feeling better.
Yeah.
So.
No, it hurts.
Yeah, I think you need to go in and have it looked at.
Good luck.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. And he may call back and let us know in a month or two how
what happened.
That'd be great.
Hopefully good news.
Good news. Ruth and Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Hi. I don't have pain. I have a question. Back when I was a kid, I used to play on the swing set all day long, all day. And when you think, about how you develop your front to strengthen your back, when you're playing on the swing, you know, how you lean back and you put your legs out in front of you to make yourself go higher, and, you know, and it was such a core strengthening exercise. It makes me wonder why we don't have swings for adults in the health club. You know, because, I mean, when you think of how awful a treadmill is, you get on it and, it's boring, 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 run, boring, no motion reward. When you're swinging, you get this marvelous motion reward for all your effort. And I used to, like I said, I used to swing all day. One of the neighbors would call my mom, and she'd call me home and say, Mrs. Keith says you've been on her swing set all day. Yeah, well, I know when I was waiting for it. Well, she, go play somewhere else. So I go play on the Harvey swing set.
Well, Ruth, you're giving a great example. Lori mentioned early on is you want to find something you enjoy doing, and clearly you enjoy doing this. And, you know, the fact that you feel it's been of benefit to you for strengthening, well, then it has been. Your core gets strengthened with lots and lots of activities with some basic assumptions that you're setting your core to a degree and you're using muscles for support and stability as opposed to joints in your back. So,
right, but the cities are taking all the swings out of the parks now. You know, you can hardly find a swing anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, if you think about that posture, it's not unlike many of the exercises we do where you're on your back and you do leg lifts and things like that.
Boring.
Yeah. I hear you. And some of the newer exercises are these suspended exercises where, you know, you hold yourself up by your hands or your feet are suspended and you work your core. So it's similar in some ways to those things, but certainly, not nearly as much fun. I know I love the vestibular piece of that too. You know, you get all that motion in your inner ear. It's very rewarding, very relaxing. So I agree.
Keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can, you can still purchase swing sets.
Yep.
Yeah. True. That's right.
Yeah. That's
right.
Yeah.
You might want to think about that, Ruth.
I know. I think the adult version is the rocker, and I don't like that either.
Right. Not the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same.
No.
Thanks for calling. Jim in Galena, Illinois, it is your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey. Good morning. Thanks very much. Really enjoying this. Just great comments about piriformis, which is one of my absolutely prime affliction, but I'm calling about negative heel shoes, and I've used them and enjoyed them, but I don't know if they're actually of benefit. And I wonder what the professionals' opinion are about negative heel shoes, that, like declining heel, like the old Earth shoes,
sure.
which are apparently no longer manufactured for men. I can't find them, and I'm very frustrated by that. Is it something that is okay? What do you think?
Well, you said that they're good for you. Good for you in what way?
Well, they're more comfortable. I feel I can walk around longer. I don't get that sense of foot fatigue and all the energy draining out of my feet. Because I do have, you know, occasional piriformis issues, and we think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Also, SI joint, some kind of injury to my SI joint is what the doctors that I've gone to think. But like a lot of people with no health insurance for the past 15 years, you know, big MRIs to really scope out the situation have never been done, so it's their best guess as to what's wrong with me. But
yeah.
If I wear negative heel shoes and don't do stupid things, I get along pretty well.
So the question is, what percentage of your being better is related to not doing stupid things, and what percentage is related to the shoes? But, you know, I mean, it's a great point. Negative shoes for you, fantastic. You know, it's a winner. And there's something about how you stand, how you move, your posture, your anatomy that makes negative heel shoes work for you. For other people, they may not work at all. It's the same with the rocker bottom shoes. You know, some people just absolutely swear by them. They made all the difference in the world for them. And other people, they're going to make them worse. Barefoot running, same thing, you know, the minimalist shoes. Some people swear by them. They're perfect for them. Great. And I think it points out to the one size fits all really doesn't work for people. So when you say, is this good or is this bad? Well, you have to define the parameters of that. Good for what and good for who? So I think the reason there's so many things out there is because there are so many different things that work for different people.
Yeah, and that really is true. And so much of the research over the years has looked at back pain as one homogeneous group. My analogy always has been, if you took everybody off the street with abdominal pain, belly pain, and took out everybody's gallbladder, you know, two people might get better. So then would you conclude never to take somebody's gallbladder out? No. You identify people with gallbladder problems and you deal with the gallbladder. It's the same thing with the back. There isn't a magic bullet for people with back pain. And footwear makes a difference in terms of the posture of the knees and hips and the lumbar spine. And what can work great for one person will get the other person in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Jan in Watersmeet, Michigan, up next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you, Larry. Real quick question. I had a back injury about 10 years ago. I fell, lower back injury. Doctor took care of me. I had some ribs broken, went through my lung, and an AC separation on my left side. And they diagnosed, they gave me an X-ray and CAT scan and everything, and found out I have what they call a vacuum phenomena. I believe that's where your discs are gone. And my doctor retired about a month ago, and I got put to a new doctor. And the new doctor took me off all my medication and put me on a 5-week reassessment to come in and have everything gone through again. And I don't know. I'm in a lot of pain. It's continual pain. I was active and everything up until, you know, this new doctor. And now I'm dead in the water, and I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the vacuum phenomenon can be associated with degeneration of the discs that are between the vertebra. And for some people, it can cause significant symptoms, and other people have it and don't know they have it, and they don't, because they've never had back pain in some of the research that has been done. I can't really speak to the new regimen you're on, but sometimes when you've been on a program, whether it's medications or certain activities, and slowly, progressively, you're getting worse and worse, sometimes it's really good just to kind of step back and start over again and then start rebuilding a program that may fit you better at this point in time. And so I think the only thing I can suggest, Jan, is to make sure you keep your appointments and follow up and keep track of how your days are going compared to 3-4 weeks ago, and your activity level and types of symptoms, and work on developing a plan that hopefully will give you better relief than what sounds like you've had recently.
Right. Yeah, it's just progressively getting worse. I'm inactive. I'm not as active as I was riding a bike and doing everything that I was doing. I'm dying in the water here, and I feel it at my age. I'm 68.
Yeah.
And,
So I do feel it in my body, and I don't know if it was right for them to completely just cut me, you know, like new doctor, new theory.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes, and some of the medications that people are on, especially narcotics, you can end up, you know, kind of getting, you know, caught with taking more and more and needing more and more. And so from a medication standpoint, if that was one of the things that was stopped and you're starting over, many times that can be a good idea, a good plan. And you may have some rough weeks in the beginning, but in the long run, you could actually be much better for it. So like I said, just keep your line of communications open with this person and keep pursuing, you know, hopefully a better quality of life.
How long would you go before you would seek out another opinion? Would you give it
Well, I'd go back to this new physician and say, okay, I've been keeping a diary for the past 5 weeks, and you know, this is my pain level, this is my activity level, these are the things I've tried, and this is the response, and then see what the recommendation is. So maybe the recommendation is to you know, restart some medications one at a time to see where you're getting the most benefit. And then slowly reassess over time. So mm-hmm. I think I'd wait until I went back and saw what the plan was next. And, you know, if the plan is, well, you know, continue and the activity level's continuing to decrease, you know, it might be time to ask for another opinion.
Yeah, and I think part of the discussion also is what to expect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, Jan, talking to the doc, what's a reasonable time frame for you to start noticing some improvement? And not only kind of what are the short-term goals, but the long-term goals and an overall prognosis. That should be part of the discussion and information that you receive. And letting the physician know how you're feeling and what your frustrations are should also be part of the discussion, too.
Yeah, there you mm-hmm. go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. More callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Scott in Madison next. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Hi, thanks. I'm 60 years old. And I just turned 60. And earlier this year, I injured my knee, and it turns out I did some physical therapy for it, and it turns out it's a torn meniscus. I finally went to an ortho person and got MRI, and it's a torn meniscus, or it's a scuffed up meniscus, medial meniscus, and it's just been hurting, and I've done the physical therapy exercises that are intended to strengthen the muscles around in my leg and in my hips, and I've done the physical therapy for loosening up the hips and, you know, having better posture and so on. And I understand that if you do this long enough, it's possible that you can strengthen the knee so that you lighten the load on the knee and you perhaps take away some of that pain. Another way to deal with it, I know, is to have the arthroscopic surgery to smooth the meniscus. What I'm wondering is, in your experience, how often can a person actually do the strengthening to avoid the surgery and to cut down the pain?
Well, what a good question. Part of it is many of the people who scuff up their meniscus don't show up in our clinics because they sort of deal with it on their own. You know, they change what they do, modify their activities, do some icing, whatever. And those sort of milder cases don't show up in any of the statistics or the research studies. The only people who show up are those that have an injury that's severe enough that they end up in a physician's or physical therapist office. So it's not meniscus tear yes or meniscus tear no, but the severity, location. And then there are other risk factors such as body weight, knee alignment, activity level, genetics, sex, all those things that come into play in terms of what's the prognosis on your knee. So all that being said, the big things that we look for, ongoing swelling. If you're having regular ongoing swelling, even a little bit in your knee on an ongoing basis, that's an unhealthy environment for your joint surfaces. So I would typically tell people, if you're having swelling on a regular basis, you probably need to have something done because your knee is unhappy. The chronic synovitis, the cells that are present there are just unhealthy for your knee joint. If you're having episodes of catching, locking, or instability, you need to have something done because you will further tear and damage your meniscus and your joint surfaces. So how long have you been doing exercise? You injured it how long ago?
I injured it in mid-May. And mid-May. I started the exercises in, say, mid-June.
Okay.
And I've been doing them kind of on and off. I got discouraged. You know, you get discouraged
sure.
when you stop doing them. And the pain keeps getting worse. And I have had ongoing and actually increasing swelling.
Okay. Yeah. Then I would say that, for me, that would be enough. You should be getting better with the exercises and with time if your knee was responding. So I'd say that you're probably going to fall into the surgery camp.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
you bet.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And having had some meniscus surgery at one time, I it was well worth it. I can tell you that because the pain went away and on that knee, at least, and
sure, and you know, and you change how you walk. You change. I remember watching you limp for a long time, Larry.
It was painful.
That's right. It can start to affect your hip and your back. You start shifting the load to your other knee, and so then your other knee starts to hurt because you're increasing the loading on that knee, and the whole thing starts to cycle out of control.
Yeah, so I think Laurie's point earlier is really important. There are people with meniscal injuries and some tears who actually do better without surgery compared to those who do have surgery, especially when you get a year out from the onset. But the swelling is really important. The locking and clicking with pain is really important. And loss of range of motion, especially if you can't straighten your knee, are markers that something needs to be done surgically inside that knee.
Yeah. So on one knee, I had surgery, and the other knee, I had something else that was not surgical, but with a really good result.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can go both ways. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody. You can join us at 800-642-1234 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And certainly if you have a question today, I hope you'll join in as well. Mary in Janesville has our next set of questions. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a knee issue. I've been listening as I've been waiting. I'm 80 years old, for one thing. So my therapist, I have a balance issue. So he wanted me to get on a walking program, possibly on a walking track. Well, I've tried it, and this track is cement, and my knees are telling me, ouch. I have a little bit of fluid on the one knee, and I've been just in a lot of pain.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Knees don't like cement. You know, our joints and our lower extremities don't like cement. Cement doesn't give much, so every pound you put into the cement, it gives right back to your joints. So so I would say, can you find a different surface to walk on?
What would you recommend?
My first recommendation would be a dirt trail, if you can find it. You know, we have trails here in the Madison area that are dirt. You know, they're well kept so that they're not uneven.
Right.
Otherwise, many times high schools open their tracks to people, and those have a really nice, soft, compliant surface. So that would be another option. And usually those are, you know, they're close and they're safe, and you know they're you're not out in the woods somewhere. And that way, if your knee starts to get sore, you can also hop off. Because compared to a trail, when you go out and then all of a sudden your knee hurts and you still have to walk back, so a track is another nice option.
There's a nice and I'm starting to think of it. My daughter runs in cross country, and there was a meet in Janesville a couple of weeks ago at a center, and there would be. You might just look up athletic centers. I can't remember the name of it now right off the top of my head, but I know there's a nice place where, you know, she was able to compete. And, And so that could be a possibility for you.
Yeah, yeah. Usually those tracks are available, and some facilities might have an indoor track. The cushion, I think, would help. And Mary, you probably have already done this, but footwear, you know, having good cushion in your soles.
And here is another issue, too. I have, I have a foot that's pronating. Of course, 80 years old. And so I did get some shoes for that. However, they throw me off.
Your balance?
My balance. Mm-hmm. And seems to make the knees actually worse.
Hmm. Well, you know, another option is to use the walking poles to mm-hmm. kind of assist your balance while you're walking.
Right.
So, you know, if your shoes are throwing off your balance, you know, you may need to rethink that. And there's a lot of options in terms of shoes that can that can fit you and not affect your balance. Sometimes you can just add a shock-absorptive insole or insert into a shoe that you already like and feels comfortable for you in terms of your balance.
Right.
So that's another idea. And are you still seeing the physical therapist for your balance?
Yes, he's actually at the UW Rehab. You probably know him.
Be. So, you know, have him take a look at your knee, because the other question is, why is one knee bothering you and not the other? There may be some other things that he needs to address in terms of strengthening around that hip and knee to support your...
Well, there we go. Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt, but strengthening, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And
yes.
My hips, and I do. I have some osteoporosis too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So it all goes together. So sometimes, you know, people come in to physical therapy and they'll be working, for example, on their balance, and they'll say, "Well, why am I doing these strengthening exercises?" Well, part of it is, you know, obviously strength is a component of balance, mm-hmm. but sometimes we need to strengthen your infrastructure so that you are able to tolerate the things that we really want you to do down the line to treat whatever you came in for. So if you came in for your balance, we say, wow, well, if we start putting you on a balance program where you're standing in single leg stance, we're going to flare up a hip or knee joint because you don't have enough strength there to do that activity. So sometimes things are phased. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I've worked with him for off and on for 9 years.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I have balance exercises here at home, which, you know, I do, and for balance, but I hadn't been walking per se, but that cement, this walking track is cement, and it just has a little, there's no
give.
Oh, okay.
You need to get off that.
Yeah.
The sound of it.
It's kind of funny they'd make a walking track out of cement, but.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. With a thin covering is not much of a thin covering. That's like walking at malls, they tile on cement.
Right.
And it's pretty firm surface.
Yep.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Alan, Port Washington, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I just got a simple question. How do your professionals there feel about the inversion bed?
Inversion beds. What are they, by the way, Bill?
So, you're talking for a low back pain?
Yes, or any kind, just even for exercise.
Okay. Well, the inversion bed that I'm familiar with, it's not really a bed. It's you lie on it's on like a board or a frame, and you're in it standing up, and they lock your ankles or knees in, and then they tilt you backward to the point where you're somewhere between lying flat on your back to upside down on your head. Does that sound familiar?
That's correct. Yeah, the inversion table. Yes.
Okay. Inversion. Okay. Well, unweighting. Joints can be a beneficial thing, whether it's a knee or hip or lumbar spine. And the inversion table has been around for decades. And there are people with certain degenerative changes in their spine where the unweighting can be very, very useful. It tends not to cure anything in terms of the underlying cause, but in terms of giving some people really good relief and allow people to stay in control of the back pain, it can be very beneficial. There are a couple of potential complications you have to be careful with. blood pressure issues, eye issues, you know, being tilted upside down like that can cause some problems for people. So that's part of the screening that we would do when we're assessing whether this is something that may be useful or not. But the idea of unweighting, taking pressure off joints, decompressing joints, is you can do it in lots of ways and has merit for a number of people.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Patty in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, hi. I'm sorry. Are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have a knocking knee. It knocks. It doesn't cause me pain, but going upstairs and now just walking. This happened last summer. I went to PT. I did the exercises. I wore this J kind of brace. It went away. I stopped using the brace. And a few months ago, I did some plyometrics, and my knee said that it didn't like that. And now it's not going away. And it's a larger looking than the other. And when I bend my knee, it wants to go, my right knee, it wants to go towards the inside of my right foot, whereas my other knee goes straight down the middle. And today the doctor sent me back to PT, and I'm concerned that it's bone on bone. How will PT deal with that?
Okay. Well, that was a lot of information. So when you say knocking knee, you say, do you mean your knock kneed? Is that what you're saying?
No. When I walk, it goes, you can hear it. It knocks.
Oh, it clicks.
And you can hear a sound.
Okay.
Although it's not painful.
Okay. All right. How will PT help with that? Well, may I ask how old you are, Patty?
Yeah, 58.
Okay. So, you know, you're bone on bone. So, you know, you think, well, what are my next options? Well, your next option, if you're bone on bone, is a knee replacement. You're pretty young for a knee replacement.
Ew.
So there is a large body of literature suggesting that people with osteoarthritis of the knee can improve their pain and their symptoms and their function with some specific physical therapy treatments. Some of those are manual therapy, particularly at the knee and at the hip, where working with some of the muscles, tight joints, weakness, inflexibility can improve how you move and decrease your pain. Does it change the actual bone on bone? No, it doesn't. But there are many people with significant arthritis out there who have no pain, who have no symptoms. So there are many people who have significant arthritis and have no pain. So just because you have arthritis doesn't mean you're going to have pain or decreased function. So the purpose of physical therapy is to strengthen and improve the mobility, for example, at your hip so it can compensate for your knee, to improve how you move so you decrease the stress on your knee joint and you shift the loading to your hip or to your ankle, strengthening muscles around your ankle so your ankle can take more of the load and decrease the stresses on your knee. And these often improve your pain level and your function at that joint. So that's the idea.
Well, I exercise a lot and I do yoga a lot.
Those are wonderful. And again, I see many people who are strong, but they're not using the muscles in a way that helps offload their joint. So some of it is not just strengthening or just flexibility. That's the infrastructure that's necessary in order to teach you the skill of how to stand, move, change positions, using those muscles in the right way to offload your joint. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And let's turn to Pat in Rome, Wisconsin next. Pat, hi.
Good morning. I've been diagnosed with spinal stenosis, and it can be quite painful. I only get relief, really, when I'm sitting. Therefore, I'm not doing a lot of exercises. Is there something I can do that will alleviate this pain?
Well, there are some other options, but I'm glad you can find something to make you comfortable. Spinal stenosis implies narrowing. There are certain spaces, or sometimes what I call windows, for nerves to course through from our spine down into our pelvis and then into our legs. And there are different changes that can occur that narrow those spaces and put pressure on a nerve, and it can be very, very painful. Typically, it's more pain in the legs than it is the back, is more common. There are trunk positions or back postures that actually give the nerves more space, and that's when we sit and sit slumped. There's actually a little more space for nerves. When you're upright standing, there's a little bit less space for nerves. And so it makes sense that you feel best in sitting and probably have a difficult time with walking. It's important that you stay as active as possible. And if you have a really difficult time with standing and walking, if you can get access to a pool, sometimes the unweighting of a pool, the buoyancy of the water will allow you to do a lot more exercise than a land-based program. And, if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this, Pat, I would recommend it. They can evaluate you. There are some other exercises that help give your trunk more flexion, that give those nerves more space. But there's a point in the program when you start improving to a degree, actually you need more arch in your back, more bending backward in your back. And we accomplish that with a variety of different exercises.
And we can probably talk a little bit more about that later. Let's take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with our guests. Stay with us. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, taking a look at all those aches and pains and sprains and strains, dealing a little bit more with the lower back perhaps than other days, but other times we have our two guests on. But I'll tell you what, if you've got a lower back pain, you probably want some help, and you want it right now. And Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault are here to help you. Bill is a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine. They've been doing a show. They've been with us for many, I don't even know how many years it's been.
20. Forever. I believe it's 20.
Yeah.
Years.
We should go out and celebrate.
Yeah. Where's the wine?
It's our anniversary this year.
Yeah. So we're dealing with all kinds of things today, and we had one question. Was Pat?
Yes. It was Pat. And so Pat has spinal stenosis and talked about generally people with spinal stenosis where there's narrowing, not enough room for nerves, feel better when their trunk is flexed or bent forward a bit. So that's why she's most comfortable in sitting. But that's not very functional. People need to stand and walk and carry things and get in and out of cars and chairs. And we need our back to be able to bend backward. In the early stages, when it's very painful, exercising in a pool with the buoyancy of the water can be very, very helpful and get a lot of exercise and comfortable. Sometimes riding a bike with your trunk flexed is a way to get some aerobic activity and still be comfortable. And there's different exercises related to trunk flexion. But at some point, as people recover, they need to be able to arch the back more. And so we switch and work on giving them stretching muscle groups or certain parts of the spine so they can arch backward. And that's where the physical therapist can come into play and help somebody transition from kind of part A of the rehab program to part B and then into recovery. So, Pat, my comment was, if you've not seen a physical therapist, I would go to one and be very clear of what you're able to do and what you can't do and what you have access to from an equipment standpoint or exercise standpoint. We can help a lot of people with spinal stenosis with the right program.
And thanks again for calling, Pat. I appreciate your call very much. We had we have some emails and Facebook questions, and we should probably get a couple of those as well. We had Gina, who said about a month ago she started jogging 4 miles a day. She every other day, actually. She runs the first mile, walks the second, runs the third, and walks the fourth. She says she feels that walking, the walk, jog is stretching enough. Does she need to still stretch? Or what do you think about her program?
Well, I like her program because she's getting out there and she's getting some exercise, doing something she likes. She started a month ago and she's still going, so that's a great sign that this is something that's working for her. She hasn't had any injuries and she feels wonderful. So I'd say, well, geez, that regimen's pretty good for her. Typically, there's a lot of controversy about stretching. Stretching yes, stretching no. In general, if you're starting out doing something at this level, where she's doing some running and some walking. It's not so intense, that stretching prior to that. Is that important? Typically, if you're going to stretch, we tell people to do a warm-up first, and that often includes some jogging. So you want to get the muscles warmed up and increase circulation to them before you stretch them anyway. If she's going to stretch at all, sometimes we tell them to stretch when they're done as part of a cool down to return their muscles to that that lengthened position, and just as part of a regular cool down as blood flow is redistributed. I think it's a good habit to be in. Just some easy things for someone who's running: your calf muscles to prevent Achilles problems, your quadriceps, hamstrings, and your low back. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think including some is a good idea, and I would include it at the end as she has suggested rather than at the beginning.
Melissa in Eau Claire has a question. Hi, Melissa. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question or concern is I have a slight scoliosis. I've had it for the majority of my life. Some hip pain. I think what the real issue is I'm on my feet for, spurts of 7 hours at a time. So what I'm wondering is, I've bought the Skechers rocker shoes, which feel absolutely wonderful for the first couple hours, but then I start getting the lower back pain and the hip pain. And I'm wondering if a shoe insert would help. I guess I'm kind of maybe on the flat footed side. Would that be something that would be beneficial to my situation?
Well, it's a little bit difficult call without examining you. So for someone who's flat-footed, theoretically, if we put an arch support in your shoe, it should improve your lower extremity posture. But I'd really want to see you before I made that call.
Yeah, okay. I would agree. We had a caller earlier who was walking on cement, and we talked about cushion in the shoe. And sometimes adding an insert can make a difference, especially if you're on hard surfaces. Melissa, how long have you had the hip pain?
Probably the majority of my adult life.
Okay. So it's not something new or really different for you.
No, it's not. It kind of runs in our family. My sister is 34 and she just had a hip replacement. So.
Okay. All right. Well, so I would try an insert. I would put it in both shoes and see if that makes a difference. See if that buys you a few more hours. If it doesn't, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, they could tell you in one, maybe two visits, is there anything that they could add in terms of strengthening of specific muscle groups or stretching certain muscle groups that could help take some pressure off that hip and your back both. They could also talk to you about what you do at work and maybe suggest some ways to modify what you're doing or how you're doing it to take a little more pressure off. But I would maybe start with inserts and see if that makes a difference for you.
Would you ever recommend starting with one pair of shoes? Now, she was saying a couple of hours, mine was great, and then it starts to go.
That's exactly what I was just about to say, that you took the idea right out of my head. So, yes, I was going to say if there's another kind of shoes that she likes, she may try changing out her shoes. So a couple hours in that, a couple hours in a different shoe, a couple hours back in this one. And the same could be true for the insoles, too. Just kind of mixing and matching so that you change up the loading in your posture because of your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, great idea, Larry.
If I could ask another real quick question, is there a specific insert I should be looking for? I did the little foot mapping thing you can do at stores, mm-hmm. those are a $50 insert. Is there one that's better than another one, or?
Well, let's really individualize. So you did you get those $50 inserts?
I didn't get them yet because I wasn't sure if that's the way I should go or not.
So you stood and they assessed your feet and so on and so forth?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's kind of where it said I'm, a little flat-footed and kind of showed where the pressure was and stuff. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think that's probably as good as anything. You can buy some off the shelf, sort of the better off the shelf that are not the least expensive $10 ones. Then you're really looking at $30 or so anyway. So for another 20, you have one that has been measured to your foot. So, you know, you're in the ballpark there in the $30 to $50 range. It's probably worth it because, honestly, it's a lot cheaper than a new pair of shoes in most cases.
Right, right.
And
right.
You'd be able to move those from shoe to shoe.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, these $200 good feet, whatever they are, that's probably not...
I would not do that first because you don't know if putting an insole in your shoe is going to cause a different problem. So we like to start with something inexpensive first and make sure that, your ankles, knees, and everything else can tolerate that change. And again, make the change gradually like contact lenses. Don't put them in and wear them all day long. You should put them in for a while because it should change loading patterns in your lower extremity and could stir something else up.
Of course. That sounds perfect. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. And Catherine in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
And thanks for taking my call. It was a year ago that I had my second total knee. And I do, before my surgery and now after, I do aerobic water exercises and yoga. And everything is fantastic before and after surgery. The only thing that I've been working, and I take either Advil or extra strength Tylenol before activities, and the only thing is stairs. When I go downstairs, my first knee is just fine, but my knee that I had done a year ago, it smarts when I'm going downstairs. Not so much up, but mainly going down. Is this going to go away, or should I be doing something further to take care of that?
Well, has it hurt going downstairs ever since your surgery, or is this a new issue?
No, it's been pretty much for a long time. I've been in the habit of just taking one step and then the next step, but I'm trying to go one step after another to get back to normal and slow. It's very slow, and now I'm almost a year out, and I'm wondering.
It's unlikely that it's going to change a year out without any intervention or change in your activity. So, if you haven't been to see a physical therapist recently, it'd probably be useful to go back and have them analyze your mechanics as you go down the stairs. There may be something about where you place your center of gravity, where you place your foot on the step, things like that that they could help you with. There could be a specific weakness on that side that was never really fully recovered after your surgery that they could address. But going in once for an assessment of your strength, your mobility, and how you go down the stairs may be able to provide some clues as to whether or not this is something that can improve over time.
Okay. All right. And the Advil and or extra strength Tylenol, is that common to be taking that after your surgery? Well, I suppose because you...
So are you taking it because your knees hurt?
Well, I take it if I'm going to be active to take care of any discomfort.
And is that just in the most recently surgical knee? Or in the first one as well?
I took a lot of pain medication prior to my knee surgery, and I guess I just kind of continue because of arthritic discomfort generalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be something for you to discuss with your doctor, whether or not you should continue to take that. And have you tried not taking it? Is it, do you just have some temporary discomfort while you do the activity and then it's better?
Well, I find that after I do yoga, it does help me.
But okay. Probably I'm in the habit of taking it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get into trouble long term taking whether it's Advil or Tylenol in terms of kidneys and stomach and liver and you know, I'd maybe talk to your primary care physician about your medication use combined with anything else that you may be taking. And you're right. You're in a habit that's made you more comfortable. You could do more in the past. And is it really necessary or not? But, yeah, talking to your primary care physician could be a really good thing, Catherine.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's give Don and Portage a chance to join in the discussion here. Don, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi there yourself. So I'm 83 years old, and a week ago today I was diagnosed with a sprained foot. And I was wondering if there's any physical therapy I can do to help improve that situation.
Don, how'd you sprain your foot?
I was just simply walking along, and I heard a snap, and the lights lit up, and that was it.
Oh, my. Did you go down?
No, I had a cane. Otherwise, okay. I would have.
Okay. And is it... Is it at your ankle, or is it down in the middle of your foot, closer to your toes?
It starts from around the front lower part of my ankle, and then comes up over the bridge of my foot.
Okay.
And somewhat around underneath under the arch.
Yeah, I certainly think it would be a good idea to see a physical therapist for a couple of visits. First of all, to understand why it is that you fell in the first place. And then to work on some specific strengthening for your foot and ankle and lower leg, you know, because you damaged that area and because you probably have a decreased activity level now, you will lose strength fairly rapidly. And so we want to make sure that you maintain the strength in your leg, that you maintain the mobility of your ankle so that you can and your foot so that as you walk on uneven surfaces, it can accommodate successfully to those so that you don't fall every time you get on an uneven surface. It can give you some balance exercises to help with that. There are a number of different aspects of this foot sprain that they could work on to make sure that you recover fully and that you're not at a decreased functional activity level when your foot is recovered.
Mm-hmm. The foot surgeon looked at it and I ended up with a goofy looking walking shoe. You've probably seen them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Motion to
yep.
it. So
yeah. Yeah, I talked to him about some therapy to maintain some strength and mobility while your foot recovers.
Mm-hmm. And good luck. And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I got an email from Brian whose wife had failed back surgery with scar tissue enough they will not do surgery on it again. She had the surgery over 8 years ago and still has massive pain, has been to doctors, and they can't seem to find a way to fix it. And she has been taking prescribed painkillers for that whole time just to take the edge off any exercises she might be able to do.
Well, it's probably finding the best medium for her to exercise in. And again, people who have had surgery and have not recovered and with scar tissue, sometimes the pool is the best place to start. The buoyancy of the water takes pressure off the spine. People can do some really nice flexibility work in the pool. They can do core work in the pool. They can strengthen specific muscle groups. The hope would be that she has access to a pool and work with a physical therapist to get on the right program. That may be the best place to start. And then hopefully can progress to a land-based program at some point afterward.
Okay. Yeah, she's looking for ways to kind of strengthen the core maybe, and that thinking that that might help.
Yep.
Yeah. So sometimes for those people, or you know, people with chronic back pain, the key is to find where they can begin exercising. Sometimes they go and they start exercising at too high a level, and it increases their pain. So there's a disincentive to continue exercising. So part of it is figuring out what medium or what kind of activities you can do that don't increase your pain significantly so that you'll continue to be compliant with it. And the pool's often a place to start that and then progress out back onto land.
Sue and emailed us from Chenequa, I believe. She says she has pain in the back of her right leg. Wonders, sounds like sciatica. She thinks maybe, do I see an orthopedic doctor, a back specialist, or a physical therapist?
Well, if there's been no injury to her leg itself and the pain is more in the hamstring or calf area, it could be related to her back. Excuse me. Sciatica usually is a sharp shooting pain that goes down the back of the leg and may be accompanied by some numbness or tingling. But I would recommend seeing a physical therapist. If she has numbness or weakness, then she should go see an orthopedist, because then imaging is indicated for her. If she does not have weakness associated with this and no numbness, then I'd see a physical therapist, and they can sort out, you know, is it her back, is it a muscle in her leg, and what to do about that.
Let's turn to Harold in Superior next. Hi, Harold. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. I injured my back, and I tore my in a fall. I tore the muscles in my back, which I've had back pain in the past, and finally got over, mostly over it, and now they're all kind of weakened from that. And my concern more is focused on my quadriceps. I am seeing a physical therapist, she's Scala has taped my legs with tape spaced between. They're like three strips going this way and that way and crossed all over the place. It's amazing. But beyond that, just what would come to mind as far as to you the very most important do's and don'ts here? Don't do this and do that. Type thing, what would come to mind?
Okay, well, we mentioned earlier about activity or exercise. If you're having pain that is sharp, stabbing, shooting, or pinching, your body is telling you to do something else. If you do an activity or an exercise where pain moves down further into your leg, especially below the knee, or becomes accompanied by numbness or tingling, your body is telling you need to find some other way to do this. And then other than the general principles is working with the physical therapist and going through what's a typical day for you. And that can tie into posture or positioning that may be better for your back or quads than others. So that's what I would do is next time you see the physical therapist, take in a list of activities that you need to do on a regular routine basis. And they should be able to go through each of those with you and take into account what you're currently being treated for and just general principles of keeping your back and legs as healthy as possible.
There you go.
Any heat, should I apply a little bit of heat? Now, it's been, this is day 17, by the way.
In terms of heat versus ice, if they're swelling, if the pain is acute, you're better off using ice. If you're over the acute phase, then you could use a combination of heat and ice. I think in terms of the back, what people can get into big trouble with is using a heating pad and falling asleep on top of the heating pad and getting burned. I mean, so you need to be careful with that. But other than that, it really is just the stage of recovery or wound healing that the injured tissues are at. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the physical therapist can really help you sort that out and identify when you could transition from one versus the other.
And with that, we are out of time. Bell and Lori, thank you so much.
It does fly.
You're back on October 20th, so we'll look forward to that.
Fantastic.
Very good.
Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenall will be back on October 20th, and we'll do it all over again with them. Tomorrow, we'll learn about what causes separation anxiety in pets and how you can help them get over that. So we look forward to that as well. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening in, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.